Hi, I'm Peter Emberg, founder and CEO of Elster, and I'm here today with Dana Holmes for our next episode of the Elster podcast. I'm so thrilled to have the Queen of Gifts here with us today. Thank you, Dana, for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We really appreciate your taking the time out to meet with us on one of our first podcasts. You were one of the first people we thought we had to connect with for the podcast. Our history goes way back, and you know, we've been working with Dana for years. I remember when you were a star on the rise at gifts.com. We had just I had actually only recently launched Elster, and it was funny because I had tracked down the old merchandiser for Red Envelope, which was, you know, originally the big gift site on the internet. And her name was Christine Dang, and she was, you know, giving me some perspective and ideas based on her experience. And she said, you know, you've got to look at gifts.com. That site is amazing. You know, they really are doing it right. And, you know, it's a from scratch. It's all recommendations, all the troubles that we had about supply and design and shipping and et cetera, they've left to the merchants, and they just have the freedom to find the best gifts out there. It's a merchandiser's dream. That's what she told me. And she's like, you should be looking at how they're doing things. And so, you know, with that, I was like very curious, and we just thought, gosh, you know, we got to get out there and connect with gifts.com. And I remember shortly after that is when we first partnered there, and you were Dana Schultz at that time.
That's right.
And I'm just kind of curious what you thought when you heard about this elf company reaching out to you when we first met.
Sure. I know. It feels like so much has changed, yet so much is the same with internet applications and shopping in general since then. But back then, I remember you guys coming in and us learning more about Elster and thinking about how our business models could work together and how they're different. And I just remember thinking that Elster was such a great idea because people's lives are on the move now more than ever. And today, even more than then, people are living in other countries and other places. And especially right now with the pandemic, people aren't able to see each other as much. So it comes all the way back from then to now that it's just a great service for people who are trying to stay connected with the people they love and care about and have shared interests with. So at gifts.com at the time, we were just kind of fascinated with this thing that was so simple and yet so powerful. And I'm really glad that you brought it to our attention.
How did gifts.com, how did you get started in that? That was one of the first companies that Interactive Corp, I think, you know, built from the ground up. And I just, I think you were one of the original folks there. How did that happen? And why was that seen as such a great opportunity?
Well, I was actually the sixth employee there, maybe seventh, I don't know. But I was not a part of the incubation or the ideation portion of it. But Lee Zarelli was the one who actually pitched the idea, from my understanding, and I don't know that much about it personally. They IAC wanted to try to figure out a business model, something new that they could start from the ground up, and gifts.com is the one that won that internal kind of competition because people always struggle with what to get as a gift, and it's a huge industry. There, people spend so much money on presents in a year, and a lot of those presents go unappreciated or they're just not the right gift. And how do we help people not feel stressed about it? How do we help people spend the right budget on it? How do we help people connect with those that they want to connect with via gifts? So that was, from my understanding, the basis of how gifts.com started, and it kind of evolved over time with developments in the internet, like Facebook and social media in general, mm-hmm. and digital marketing in general. You know, our original PR agency was a traditional PR agency, and we quickly were like, we need to pivot to a digital PR agency to work with on how to promote this business, because it was that long ago that digital marketing was still an up and coming topic. So yeah, it was a fun journey.
Well, you really seem to have a knack for it. You became the chief guru, if I remember the term right, the gift guru at and probably a corporate title that was even more impressive at gifts. So how did you find your niche in identifying great gifts and gift ideas for people?
Sure. Well, you could say it runs in the family. My aunt was a VP at Rust Berry for a long time, and she was always giving us these cool gifts that was part of her job. And I always thought that was the coolest idea, to work for a company that focused on gifts. But that was growing up. And then in college, I started experimenting with doing some street team marketing and product launches. I launched in store I helped Swiffer launch in store, and I helped Ferrero Rocher Chocolates launch in store. And I started getting the marketing and product bug a little bit then. And then my last year of college, I helped the Home Shopping Network launch hsn.com, because it was that long ago that people were launching their websites. And I wrote a ton of product descriptions and moderated celebrity chats on TV via the internet, which was a totally new thing to do. So I was really connecting products with the internet, with people and different audiences, and all the different ways you can activate those audiences. So over time, it just kind of happened that I found this opportunity at gifts.com to come in at the ground level and be, I started there actually as a toy editor, and I covered toys, and I did public relations as a PR assistant. And over the 7+ years that I was there, I worked my way up to being the editor of toys, the editor of teens and pets, and eventually became the one who ran social media and public relations. And basically I was a busy person. I became their spokesperson, and I've done over 1,000 interviews covering the topics of gifts, etiquette, and shopping, all because of my time at gifts.com. So it really was a great tenure for me to have there for those 7+ years, to go from just covering toys and assisting with public relations to running all that stuff. It was a really cool experience.
And 1,000 interviews about gifts. That is incredible. And obviously why we think of you the queen of gifts. How did that feel at first? Did that first start when you were at gifts.com?
Yes, it did. When I was much younger, I did some TV stuff and some modeling jobs and things. So I guess when I was at gifts.com, they were like, she's the young, cute one, put her on TV. But luckily it worked out. I didn't flop. My first TV segment as a gift expert was on Fox and Friends. So it was a major national show. My first time on TV talking. So that was a terrifying experience, but it worked out really well, and I didn't have any hiccups. So they started pitching me more and more and more, and I did a ton of interviews. And the cool thing about doing interviews is that it really helps you think more about what you do and how you do it, because you really want, or at least me, because I'm a perfectionist, I really want to give the best I can give every time. And so when I'd get these questions from media, I would sit there and really think about how do I give them the best ideas, and how do I give them the best solutions to their problems? So that really helped me get better at my job.
Was Fox and Friends a good interviewer? Did they stump you with any tough questions that made you really think on your feet, or did they let you come prepared?
It was a tabletop segment. I went through the top gifts for under $100 for everybody in your family. I had 2 minutes to talk about 12 products. So it was just like a race to the finish line, but I was able to get a couple jokes in there, a couple demos in there, and I felt like it was a huge success for me.
All right, this is a little self-serving now because this is one of my first interviews, but I wonder if you have an idea of what has made your interviews really interesting, kept it, you know, feeling natural and conversational, and maybe what has makes for a less enjoyable interview after your thousand plus interviews.
Sure. I mean, I think preparing in advance and practicing in advance is a really important thing to do. Recording yourself or looking at yourself in the mirror, watching other people, listening to other people who you think have done really good interviews. That's really helpful for me. I remember when I first started doing TV, I would watch the other people who would go on the Today Show and go on the other shows, and I would watch how they moved their body, and I would listen to how they talked or spoke, and I would just think about how can I integrate some of that into how I do it so that people will find me more engaging, because when you first get up there, you're not very interesting in general. People, the way that you talk with someone in person is totally different than how you would talk with them on TV or in a podcast, for example, because it's just not that face-to-face in-person contact. So you have to provide more energy through your movements and through your voice and through all the other tools that you have at your disposal that you don't realize until you start watching and listening to others with that lens on.
Okay, thank you. Well, you know, this is our third podcast right now, so I am taking notes, and that's a lot of good information. I want to go back to now the time when, you know, I want to tell you a story that you actually don't completely know, you know, part of, was one day when after we had done our partnership with gifts.com, it didn't work out great, as well as what we had hoped, I think, at the time. And, you know, Gifts, you know, kind of moved on trying new things. We were trying new things. And I remember waking up too early one day, and I was tossing and turning, and I was thinking, why aren't we working with the Queen of Gifts? I mean, I've got to get in touch with Dana. We've got to step up our game. I mean, we really do. And that morning, fortunately, you're on the East Coast, I'm on the West Coast. So when you get an email at like 8 a.m, it doesn't seem that weird to you. And I remember just reaching out like, Dana, we've got to talk, you know?
Yes, I remember that.
I'm feeling a crisis. Yeah, do you remember that reach out? Maybe it was a little impulsive, I guess. How did that, you remember when I finally reached out to you then?
I do, definitely, yes. That's how I got most of my clients, actually, for my brand development agency that I started after I left gifts.com, Dana Holmes Media. And yeah, you weren't the only one who reached out to me saying, I've been following you at gifts.com, and I would love you to do, I see that you're on your own now and would love to see what you can do for my company. I'd never really had to seek clients. So
yeah,
that's been pretty great.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear that it was so easy for you to pick up clients, and that maybe I wasn't the only one tossing and turning and looking for an expert to assist.
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, it's exciting when that happens. Every single time I get an email like that, I just think, this is great. I love it. I love what I do. I love that it's memorable to other people. I love that I can help. I think, yeah, it's always very exciting to get those emails.
You've been an enormous help for us, and our merchandising manager, Megan Tialdi, has, I know, just really grown tremendously through collaborating with mm-hmm. you for helping, you know, learning techniques, learning about trends, et cetera. It's just, I think, been really wonderful for her, and I'm extremely grateful that we've had access, you know, to work with you in that regard. So extremely grateful for your help in making us more and more professional. I mean, I think we're doing our best work ever now.
It's great to see how the business is growing, and it's been a real pleasure to work with Megan and help her look at things in a different way and really think more deeply about the merchandising strategy. That's been really fun for me, and I know we have a really good working relationship, so it's been fun to watch it grow.
Well, we are you know, absolutely on a whole other level compared to when we started, and I think Megan has done an amazing job of learning and being inspired with you. I think she just works really well with you, and appreciates so much how what a great mentor you've been for her, and a wealth of knowledge.
Thanks.
Now, you are involved now with a new venture, and I see it almost, I mean, in a way, it seems kind of paralleling in a way, you know, USA Interactive and now CNN stepping into this world of product recommendations and things, CNN Underscored. How did you get involved with CNN Underscored?
Sure. It was kind of a roundabout entrance. I have been running my own company for 6-ish years after my son was born. And I enjoy working with lots of clients and having that flexible life when my kids were little. But then I started thinking, I really want to work in-house somewhere more. I want to have more of a family that I can be a part of and contribute to longer term with bigger goals that I can roll out. And so I put feelers out in 2019 in May. And within a few weeks, I had been hired as the commerce editor for Great Big Story, which is actually owned by CNN. And it's like a micro documentary company that makes really cool, inspiring videos about interesting stuff and people. And it was originally touted as their answer to Vice and BuzzFeed, but it kind of became its own entity. So they were looking into exploring written commerce-focused content. And that is kind of my sweet spot. So they hired me right away. And I came to the realization that CNN Underscored is just an awesome platform, and that audience aligns with my background. And we felt like it was a good dovetail for me to kind of scooch over there.
This is a fascinating trend. It seems to be happening with CNN and Underscored. We saw New York Times acquired Wirecutter, and there are other examples as well where let's say more traditional media companies are entering into e-commerce and product recommendation as opposed to other, you know, more traditional kinds of advertising that they've generally, you know, built the business on. What does that say about, you know, how people are shopping now, and how news and earlier media companies are looking to monetize in the future?
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people are feeling overwhelmed by their options of what to get and where to get it. And they're more limited on their time. They have a lot going on in their lives. So I feel like a trusted source that where they can look for advice on what to buy is worth so much to people now, more than ever. And that's kind of how we started, how Gifts.com was started, was to solve that problem in a way. But now it seems more powerful than ever that people are looking to be guided of how to spend their money wisely, how to spend less, how to be smarter about their shopping. They really are looking for that content. They're not just looking for product lists, really. They want, this is my opinion, but it seems to be what I'm seeing with all the companies that I've worked with, that content is really helping people shop. And the written word is more powerful than ever when it comes to shopping right now, I feel, because people just need that guidance. And it's something easy for them to scroll through, but they can still, they want to feel like they're buying something that means something. And just seeing a picture isn't enough anymore, I don't think. You know, people have learned that quality can be bad, even though the picture looks good. Or, you know, it may take forever to arrive, or it may not last very long, or the color might be different when you get it. So having the written content around recommendations, I think, is really important and is the future of shopping. And also, I mean, the video component as well, just showing the products and talking about the products and farming that out on social is really important.
Underscored is a new, relatively new entrant to this. And so obviously you're, you know, leading the, you know, for the newest trends around these e-commerce trends with content, with more, you know, content around written or video, around product recommendations. Were there companies that you saw that were starting to make a, you know, move and doing that well that you thought were good models to consider?
Oh, that's a good question. I feel like everybody has been trying to figure it out for a long time. And people have been trying a lot of different things. Definitely, it is a hot button right now for people to, for all kinds of companies and media companies to be starting up these product recommendation arms of the business to drive more revenue, and then figuring out how to promote it from there. And being a media company, like I've seen Insiders doing it, and I think Forbes is doing it, all over the place. Tons of different media companies are now doing these kinds of programs because it can drive a lot of revenue, and you do have a built-in audience to promote to already. So it seems like a natural extension, especially, like you said, as advertising dollars kind of wane a little bit.
Right. And, you know, I think that it's funny, there's a one of the network aggregators for affiliate marketing had coined their new term, what they called content. I think it was content, commerce and content. And they're looking at, I mean, there are actually some new advertiser budgets coming, not strictly on the, you know, cost per action affiliate model, but also, you know, paid placements, kind of in the more of the spirit of traditional, you know, ad buying, what's your audience, you know, how many impressions, et cetera. And then doing a collaboration that way. So everything seems to be changing, going back and forth on different models. But certainly the one thing, if I think from the consumer standpoint, and this is something that I feel, there's just so many choices, you know, it's just so much out there. How do you find, you know, the difference between quality and value and, you know, and things that you might regret, I guess kind of going all the way back to what you're saying with gifts, like give a gift that's going to be loved and enjoyed and not one that's going to end up, you know, in the back of your closet, never used, never enjoyed.
Right. Exactly. And I know in a New York Times interview I did, a few years back, I had said, they asked me my thoughts on wish lists. And at the time I said, no one should use a wish list. You should be grateful for what you get. And now I don't know if I agree with myself. I think that wish lists are really important because you don't know each other as well as you used to. You don't see each other all the time. You don't, I have, you know, nieces and nephews who I want to get them something they're going to love. And I only see them once a year and talk to them a few times a year. It's just not the way it used to be where you really know who you're buying your gifts mm-hmm. for. So I think wish lists are important.
Yeah. You're not alone. It took me a while to come around to the idea of wish lists, which work well within Elfster and have become a really one of the most beloved features that we have. And, but it took, you know, it took me a while. Cause I remember when I first started like, I don't know how I feel about that. But yeah, they're coming of age, I think. And they're making more and more sense. Now may be a time for an etiquette question. Like, do you share a wish list? I've not prepared you for this question, but it seemed
it is a good question. And I think you have to tread lightly on it. You know, some people find that really offensive to receive a gift list. I think it's helpful to maybe ask in advance, say, you know, my son's birthday's coming up. If I, you know, obviously we don't expect a gift, but if you want to get him something, he's happy to share his wish list or something along those lines so that it feels a little less like you have to buy something and here are the things you have to choose from. It's more like, if you're stumped, check this out. And if not, don't worry about it. You know, right, I think it has right. to be more like that. I think it's also helpful in the scenario of Elfster where you're setting up gift exchanges where you have a set price limit or, you know, whatever the various rules are. People can set up their wish lists to align with that so that it makes it a lot easier for everybody to get something that they'll like. I think it's really helpful there.
Thank you. The expert word on the wish list, an evolving piece of etiquette over the times. And that is very helpful. I'm going to think on that some more after our interview. Dana, it's been great to hear about your history, how you've become the queen of gifts, many things you've done, insights on the trends in shopping, in gift buying, and etiquette. Now I want to come to a part that I'm actually also very excited about. When we get down to specifics and some of your picks for this year, what do you think are going to be great gifts this year, you know, maybe for some specific types of people that might be something new.
Sure. Let's see. Well, really the way that I was thinking about this before we talked today was just about what people are thinking right now. Mm-hmm. I think that's always a great place to start when you're thinking about merchandising or thinking about gifts in general, what you want to buy for other people. Think about what they're going through. What is their life like? And starting there is really helpful. So obviously we're all kind of in the middle of this weird pandemic time. The economy feels a little uncertain. So I think keeping that in mind when you're shopping for other people is helpful. Like, for example, giving them something that will make their life easier or make their home feel more cozy. Loungewear is a really good gift idea this mm-hmm. holiday season, more than ever. Maybe this year slippers are actually a good gift. because people are wearing them, they're home all the time.
Yeah.
And also subscription boxes they have been just going gangbusters for the last couple of years. And now with the pandemic full swing and people being home more, they are desperate for new things and trying things and making their lives easier, from food subscriptions to it's incredible how many different kinds of these things are out there. Books for kids, art projects, hot sauce. it's so far above and beyond what you ever knew. Succulent plant of the month.
Oh my gosh.
It's really amazing. So I think those are a really great way to help people out this holiday season and give them a gift that will keep giving. And the cool thing about subscriptions too is you can just get an individual month, and then they can choose to extend it, or you can sign them up for a year if you want to be, you know, a big spender. And they're not all expensive either. Some of them are only $10 a month, and others, you know, can be a lot of money, but it just depends on what you want to do. So I think those are good categories of products. Another category that I think is going to do well this holiday season is what I'm coining as long-term luxury. And that's stuff that you can spend, you'll spend money on, but it will last a lot longer. So if you get somebody a suitcase that's going to last for years and years and years, it's worth it because you don't have to buy 10 cheap ones over the same amount of time, or things like that. So, I mean, there are tons of categories that you could go into under that, but that's the example, is just getting something that will last a lot longer, that costs more money, but you know is worth it. I think people are leaning in that direction if they're going to spend money. Another thing that people will appreciate this holiday season is their traditions and their collections. Contributing to something that they feel connected to and already feel cozy about. And for, you know, I said cozy gifts are a big trend this year. I think that contributing to someone's collection is another way to do that, whether they collect ornaments or frog stuff or whatever it is. They love Star Wars. Contributing to people's happy place is a really great way to go this year. And one other thing that I have seen that I think it'll be interesting to see how it does this holiday season, but it's standing out to me right now, and it's a toy called Tony's Box. And it's like the number three toy in Europe right now, only behind Lego and Playmobil. And you can get it at Target and elsewhere. But it's like a, I don't even know how to describe it, but it's a box, and it comes with these little characters that you can stick on top of the box, and it plays stories and it plays songs, and the kids can totally control it themselves. It removes screen time completely. It provides creative autonomy for kids, and you can collect all these characters that have their own stuff built into them, and you can also create your own custom characters. You can put your own custom content onto the characters as well. So if they're learning a foreign language, or if grandma wants to send them one where she's reading a story and they can listen to it again and again, that kind of stuff is just a really cool way to connect people also. So I think it will be really interesting to see how that does in the United States this holiday season, but I'm definitely keeping my eye on it.
Interesting. That you've given me some things to think about here, and I'm going to check that out. Gosh, something that would remove screen time and give creativity and trending around the globe. The Tony's Box, that sounds very cool. Also, a lot of interesting thoughts expanding my idea of what could be in a subscription box. I didn't realize, how much that had expanded. Long-term luxury and slippers even, huh? You know that that's long been one of the most popular searches on our, it's funny, like we have a do not need list and then we also have search trends. And some of the most popular things on the do not need list are the most searched for items, the bath bomb, slippers, and candles, you know, are the most simultaneously most searched for and least wanted, strangely. So very interesting how that evolves this year. Dana, it's been great to spend this time with you, and thank you so much for being with us here today. I really enjoyed catching up and hearing more about your story, hearing about trends you're seeing this year and beyond. And it's always a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been really fun.
All right. Well, have a great day, Dan.
Thanks, you too.